More of our continuing coverage now on the persecution of the Rohingya people in Myanmar. Around 700,000 Rohingya have fled Myanmar for neighboring Bangladesh in the last 6 months. They've been escaping brutal violence exacted by the Myanmar military, including murder, torture, and rape. The governments of Myanmar and Bangladesh have an agreement now to begin sending thousands of Rohingya refugees back to Myanmar. But experts and observers on the ground say conditions are not safe for them to return. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch has put out a satellite image appearing to show that Myanmar authorities have razed at least 55 Rohingya villages to the ground. Farah Kabir is with us from Dhaka, Bangladesh. She's country director for Bangladesh for Action Aid, an international charity that's been assisting the Rohingya refugees.
As you know, it's 6 months since the influx in August, and initial few weeks, there were like thousands of them coming. It was pretty chaotic and mayhem, but now slowly with all different actors coming together, it's much more organized. But what I mean by organized is they are in 6 feet by 6 feet plastic sheet, bamboo framed camps. And it is extremely vulnerable and fragile, but just not possible suddenly to find places for 700,000 people in 2 months. These were little hillocks, and all these hills have been almost flattened to try and accommodate that many Rohingya refugees. The, you know, latrine, water, toilets, bathing spaces, sludge management, it's all a challenge. We are all trying with all the good intentions, but it is a huge, huge piece of work.
Farah, it's understandable that the government of Bangladesh wants to find an end to this crisis. They can't host 700,000 refugees forever. So there have been these agreements, we've talked about them on this show before, to start sending refugees back into Myanmar immediately, 6 or 7,000 already supposed to go. What's your view of how feasible this is, how safe it is for people to return now?
Well, obviously, from the point of the government, they would want to repatriate. And I think people from Myanmar, Rakhine states, want to go back to their home. But there is this whole discussion that it is still not safe, because even last week, 500 Rohingya refugees came across the border. So unless it is safe, unless there's an enabling environment, I don't think that the refugees are going anywhere.
As these discussions continue, Farah, is there any monitoring or accountability being discussed here? 6,000 people to go back immediately. Will anybody be watching to make sure that they're just not going back into the fire?
Well, that's the problem, because Bangladesh government had asked for multilateral, you know, involving UN agencies like UNHCR or other relevant agencies. But the Myanmar government's not agreeing. And this is where international leadership has to come in, that this must be monitored. It must be safe on that side for any one of them to return. They're so traumatized. And the violence that they have suffered, it's unbelievable.
Farah, can you share some of the stories of Rohingya women that you've come into contact with? You're managing a huge refugee facility at Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh.
Well, you know, it is so sad that in this day and age, we are seeing such gruesome violations. I have spoken to many, and they have told us about being raped, about being harassed, how their children were taken away from them, all sorts of different kind of extreme measures were taken so that they had to leave. They have walked for miles. They walked for 10, 15 days. They gave birth on the way. Then they gave birth after they came to the camp. And it's such a sensitive issue. They're so traumatized. You just can't barge in and start talking about it. So over a period of time, we have managed to develop some trust, and they have shared. Children were taken away from them, the girls, their sisters, raped in front of them, the men taken away, being shot. So all that you have either read or seen in movies is actually happening down there.
I mean, the impact on the people that you're helping to care for must be unimaginable. If they're safe now, at least in tents with bamboo frames, the damage emotionally and psychologically has to be overwhelming.
Absolutely. I mean, who would want to become a refugee? Who would want to live in a 6 feet, 7 feet plastic room? You know, it must be when you have no other option, no choice. You have to be that desperate. And that's the situation with the Rohingya refugees. When we spoke to them, they said, at least we can sleep here. The initial reactions were, we feel safe. Now, as time is moving, they're getting very edgy. They feel the uncertainty. They don't know what the future holds for them. They really don't know what's that going to be for them tomorrow. So that initial sense of feeling safe and comfortable is now being taken over by uncertainty. Where are we going to go? Who are we going to be? Where do we belong? All these questions are coming up. And it's particularly difficult for the children. I mean, I'm so upset that these children almost belong to no one. They're stateless because the Myanmar government had stripped off their parents, the adults, of citizenship since 81, 82. And now these children have come over or were born here. Where do they belong? Are they Myanmar nationals? Are they Bangladeshi nationals? It's not possible for Bangladesh to suddenly give them nationality and citizenship. So that means their future is at large. And there's no education. They are just living on a subsistence level from one day to another. This cannot continue. It's already 6 months.
And what does the government of Myanmar want at this point after doing so much to terrorize these people and drive them out into Bangladesh? It seems to me they would be happy to have them stay next door.
Well, Todd, they obviously did not create this situation with the intention of taking them back. I'm sorry, I'm being skeptic, but I have seen no measure, no action, no gesture which suggests that the Myanmar government is welcoming them back.
Farah Kabir is country director in Bangladesh for Action Aid, speaking to us from Dhaka in Bangladesh. Farah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.